Please. Good evening.
Trick or treat.
Happy Halloween. We only have one witch in here today. In the back.
Oh, no.
Wearing a Yanni t-shirt. So let's say hello to the witch. Hi, witch. She's back there. She's wearing a Yanni t-shirt. It's good to be with you again this wonderful Halloween. Beautiful weather. All is well. Right? Since the beginning of time, saintly people have endeavored to bring peace and harmony into this world. The results have never been positive. We've had a Jesus, a Buddha, a Krishna, many others, many bodhisattvas, who have come back to bring peace to this world. Yet it has never happened. How come? Why can there not be peace in this world? The greatest of souls have tried to bring this peace here. Yet, for some strange reason, they have all missed the point. This world is not a world of peace. There have been periods when there have been peace for a while. They didn't last long. And there were wars again, man's inhumanity to man, strife, confusion. These great souls, for some strange reason, did not realize that there is another world interpenetrating this world, the real world, the invisible world, where there is total bliss, total love, infinite peace. This true world is called consciousness, for want of a better term. It is the state of absolute reality. Yet it is the invisible world. The same thing exists in each one of us. In each being in each animal, in each plant, in each mineral, in each vegetable, there is an inner force. There is consciousness, the reality of all substance. This reality can only be felt by human beings, so to speak. The vegetable kingdom, the animal kingdom, the mineral kingdom cannot understand this invisible world. Only human beings, so to speak, are able to transcend their humanity and rise above the so-called relative world, relative universe. Yet there have been very few who actually were able to see this. These very few beings, these very few people, would be considered selfish by most people, for they exclaimed, "Leave the world alone. Do not concern yourself with the world. The world is an illusion. Dive deep within yourself. Find yourself. If you discover the world within yourself, the invisible world, that is, which is the self, then you will see what the rest of this world really is." And there have been beings who were able to do this for some reason or another. They left this world deep within themselves and became the self. When the self was discovered, it became very clear that the entire world is the self. The entire universe is the self. There is only the self. And the world just does not exist as it appears. I have repeated this many times, yet it is very difficult for most people to grasp. The world does not exist. Only the self exists. It is meaningless to most people, and I don't blame them. Where they cannot do anything with it, so it seems. There is nothing they can hang on to. If you attend a sort of metaphysical church and you get into the occult, you are promised a better life. You are promised that you will transcend your problems. You will be healed of whatever ails you. You will become a multimillionaire. Your troubles will be over. Yet that has never happened, except to the people it was supposed to happen to. But there have been those few people who somehow felt something within them that there is a reality that knows absolutely nothing about this world. They cannot explain it. But they feel it. And they begin to do the work required in order to transcend and transmute the entire universe, becoming free and liberated. They gave a name to these people, yanis, sages, masters. These beings, just by being themselves, become an asset to the world and to those who are ready to follow those steps. I had a glimpse of this when I was 13 years old. My mother used to take me to the country to buy chicken. She would pick out a live chicken, they would kill it for her. And I had to watch this. I used to turn my head in disgust. And I would ask her, "Mom, why is this necessary?" And she told me, "This is the way we do it. This is the right way. We have to eat." I could never understand or reconcile myself with the killing of animals in order to eat. I didn't really put it into words. But when I went to sleep at night, I would ponder this. I would say to myself something like this: if there is a God, how can God allow the slaughter of thousands of cattle, millions of pigs, chickens, what have you, so that human beings can be the cemetery to dead flesh? And sometimes I stay awake all night thinking of these things. How can God allow this? Little by little, after months of pondering these things, it was revealed to me. I don't remember if it came in a flash or over a period of time, but I realized what we call God is invisible. This God is not a person, place, or thing, but is totally invisible and is all-pervading, omnipresent. And if God were love, how can these dastardly things taking place to animals be happening? I came to realize that the invisible world of God has absolutely nothing to do with the so-called human universe, with the relative universe. I somehow was able to comprehend that the world is an appearance. For it cannot be a part of God, since God was all-pervading, omnipresent, and God was love. Therefore, this couldn't take place in the kingdom of God. Yet it appeared as if it did take place. It must be an illusion. I came to the conclusion that the whole world, the whole universe, has absolutely nothing to do with the kingdom of God. And what my position was, my job was, to discover this truth for myself. For at that time, I didn't make the transition into total consciousness. I simply pondered these things night after night. I was able to reconcile myself with the whole universe. From that time on, I came up with the statement, all is well, and everything is unfolding as it should. These things didn't bother me too much any longer, for I felt intuitively this is an illusion. It appears to be happening. This is a world of appearances. And I became contemplative. Quiet. I no longer try to resolve things. I sort of developed a witness consciousness. This is why today when I look at this world, when I observe the universe, I am not disturbed. People who do not understand this think I am selfish. I don't care. It isn't that. I have total compassion. But I know for certain that this entire universe is Maya. when I share these things with you, I relate my personal experience. You will hear these things again and again. For this is the way to bombard your consciousness with truth. Until you finally give in and let go and surrender. Then you will be part of the invisible kingdom. And you will have eternal happiness. We can never have real happiness as long as we believe the world is real. It's impossible. Due to the fact everything changes. Nothing is ever the same. And that is very evident. The whole universe is constantly changing. How can we have faith or believe in something like this? That is never the same. We have to make up our minds. Do we want to find reality? Or do we want to keep running around the world, becoming enthralled in the beginning and disappointed in the end? We begin to see it is the mind that keeps us in bondage. It is the mind that creates the body, the world, and the universe. We cannot change other people. We've tried. It doesn't work. We cannot change the world condition. We've tried. It doesn't work. It makes no difference whom we elect president or what happens in the world. The conditions might change, but there will never be harmony and peace in this world. It is only as we transcend and transmute the mind that we see something else. We actually see something else. We live in a different world. This is the reason I appear strange to some people, to most people, to all the people. I may see an accident, somebody dying. I will render assistance, but I will be happy. For I do not see death as it appears. For some reason I look through that into the invisible world where there is joy and laughter, where there is peace and harmony. What do you see? As you look in this world, what do you see? You're seeing a result of your mind. Your mind has been conditioned since you were born. Not only that, but you have a mind that has been through many lives. So it appears. You've had many existences and many worlds, as a male, as a female. And you're under the laws of karma. Now I realize that some of you know that karma doesn't exist. Reincarnation doesn't exist. That's easy to say. But aren't you going through it? How can you say it doesn't exist when you feel it nearly every day? If you have been totally peaceful today, if you have had total joy today, total bliss today, total harmony today, then you can say there is no karma and there is no reincarnation and there is no God and there is no universe and there is nobody. But you cannot say that when you are moved by the world. You cannot say this when the world becomes meaningful to you. You cannot say this when you forget these things and you become enthralled by the world because things are going your way. As I have told you many times, if I wrote you a check for $200,000 tonight, how many of you would be back here next Sunday? I'd probably never see you again.
I'm back
in
1 month.
Right. True. And also you will find that when you become totally bankrupt, or your wife or your husband leaves you, or your house burns down, you immediately call me on the phone. You come to Satsang. For you really want to get rid of your troubles, your problems, your physical ailments. That's what you really want. Can you now see what I mean when I say you shouldn't go around saying I am absolute reality and I am consciousness and I am free and liberated and that the world doesn't exist and karma doesn't exist and reincarnation doesn't exist? Yet it exists for you because you're going through it. Do not allow your pride to get in the way. This is the ego telling you these things. You have to be totally honest with yourself. You have to see where you're really coming from. A yani has absolutely nothing to do with this world. the world, the universe becomes totally meaningless to a sage. It's not a put on. It's not imagining that all is well until some catastrophe hits you. And then you get upset, become violent, feel sorry for yourself, become depressed. You have to see where you're at, where you're coming from, what you're really made of. You can never know the truth that there is no world, there is no universe, there is no God, as long as you believe the body suffers, mentally or physical. Have you suffered mentally or physically today? If you really want to get on the bandwagon, here goes these cliches again. Get on the bandwagon. If you really want to become a part of those few people in this world that have transcended the world, you have to do what they did. The first requisite, shut up, be quiet, stop debating, stop arguing, stop trying to prove a point. Even if someone knows something that you don't, whether they share it with you or not makes no difference. For you have to come up with your own truth. There's really no one in this universe that can hand you realization on a silver platter. Number two, you have to let go. You have to let go so completely that it becomes scary. You have to totally let go mentally. You have to stop depending on person, place, or thing for your self-worth. You have to start depending on the infinite and invisible, on what you cannot see, taste, touch, or smell, or feel. Number three, you must look at the world but never react to anything. You must watch your feelings and your emotions, observe them, and as they come into contact with you, you must become the witness. Realizing that you are not those emotions. You are not your bad temper. You are not the depression. You are nothing that goes on in this world. Number four, you must develop a tremendous humility. A stupendous humility. This is more important than anything else. If someone tells you something that you don't like to hear, you do not become upset. You do not hold it in. You let it go through you. And it dissipates. For it has no energy except the energy you give it. You are responsible to yourself. If you fool yourself, you're just going to get disgusted in the end and give up all spiritual life. For you will say, I've gotten nowhere, nothing has happened, it doesn't work, it doesn't exist. I suppose this is the reason I am with you. To tell you, yes, there is a invisible realm of perfection beyond this world, interpenetrating this world, that makes this world look like kindergarten. Yet you must be able to see it yourself. Number five, you have to want it so much that you don't want it. You have to have such a strong desire to be free that all desire stops. When all desire stops, there's a quietness, a stillness that takes place within you. It is only when this stillness, this quietness comes, when you're able to see clearly, not with your physical eyes, but with your spiritual eye, not with your little eye, not with the eye thought, but with the I am. And you will see in all directions. You will see up, you will see down, you will see sideways, you will see backwards. The only thing you will see is total perfection. Which is another name for pure awareness. You have to take this thing seriously. And you're not to be serious about this thing at all. You have to reject everything. Yet you also have to accept everything. You have to surrender. And you have to realize that you are the Self. There is something inside of you that knows how to do all this. You can help by becoming quiet, by becoming still. By not making a lot of noise. Not making a big commotion. Let the world do what it will. Yet you become silent and peaceful, compassionate, have humility, just watch, look, observe, quiet the mind. Be still and know that I am God.
The only thing that didn't feel right was when you said the great masters were not aware of the invisible world. Jesus said, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. His words would be. And Maharshi said there's only one consciousness secret. He believes distributed everywhere and then went on from there.
I wondered about that too, and that, did you really mean they didn't realize it, or they just were trying to?
I was speaking of those masters, those great beings that try to make the world a better place in which to live.
Seems to me that they were trying to get us to see that there is an invisible world.
Those who have been trying to tell us to go within, and the change must come from within, are the true teachers. But those who try to improve the world and try to make this a better world have not tasted ultimate reality.
But you wouldn't put Christ and Buddha and Krishna in that category, would you?
No.
You mentioned an expression, if I'm saying it right, bodhisattvas or something like that? What does that mean?
Bodhisattva. It's a Buddhist tradition that when you become enlightened, you do not go away, but you come back to help others become enlightened.
Mm. Would that be the same as a yoni?
Not really. Most of the bodhisattvas are beings who try to uplift the race. To make this world a better place for the Lord. But when the realization comes that the world never existed to begin with, trying to make the world a better place to live is ridiculous.
You often mention the words transcending and transmuting, and I wonder if you could define them both so we'll know the difference.
Transmuting is a chemical change that takes place, a total change, a total chemical change that takes place in the body, and you become a different person, a different being. When you transcend something, you go through it from one experience to the next. And transcendental work is when you go from one step to the next step, to the next step, to the next step. But when something is transmuted, there's a complete alchemy, a total change into a total different being.
And that could happen to a self-realized person?
That happens to a person, yes. When a person realizes the truth as expressed and intelligently looks at reality, effortlessly, entirely, then all of a sudden, like a flash of light, there's a transformation. Transmutation, and you become totally free.
So transcending is sort of taking an overview about things?
Transcending is when you go from step to step. You go higher and higher. But transmuting is when you do it all at once. Mm.
What happens chemically in the transmutation process?
The brain chemical changes to begin with. The brain cells, they seem to all of a sudden take on a new reality. And they become the total servants of the mind. They no longer have the programming. All the programming disappears. The eons of programming, the past is dead, it becomes totally annihilated, and you become a new person, an expansive person.
And this is purely a chemical change?
It's a chemical change in the beginning.
Is it both chemical and spiritual? It sounds like.
It's the same thing. The brain surrenders to the mind, so to speak. The entire programming of the mind, of the brain matter, gives up to the mind. Let's go. All the circuits become dead.
I had an experience
like that once with LSD. It affects the body, yes. Okay.
Somebody said, it's all right to be Fred. And I'd never had thought that was so.
It's all right to be Fred?
When I had LSD.
Oh.
And I knew that was so. And the world was all right, and God was in his heaven, and all was right with the world. But as soon as I came down, all the thoughts and conditioning came back into my mind, and that's where I am now. But I did experience it. I knew everything's okay. Because I think that maybe with the LSD, the chemical change took place, and all that, those thoughts were put in abeyance for the time being. Want to comment on that?
With some people, when they take drugs such as LSD and other drugs, they're able to see and experience what you've experienced.
Yes.
But there are some people who have bad trips.
I've seen other stuff.
And they don't have that experience at all.
I did that.
But of course, as you just explained, you come down from it and you have to keep taking it again and again. And soon you become immune to it. And you have to take three times as much to have the same experience, and then the experience becomes less and less.
Well, I had this feeling that probably God didn't want me to fool with this stuff, so I quit.
Would it be, though, a moment of realization? Not lasting, perhaps, but would that be realization for that brief time being?
To an extent. Not complete realization. That gives you a taste of what realization is.
Because I had a friend who had a similar experience, and he said he experienced the complete loss of the ego. And even though when he came down he couldn't get it back, neither could he ever quite forget that feeling.
It gives you more feeling of bliss. It takes you way up there, where you know that all is well. But it doesn't take you completely through.
Robert, when you're talking about the deadening of the whatever happens in the brain, whatever you're saying that way, is that why if one recalls a memory, a picture of the memory never arises, and no sense of reality arises? It's like just a thought or a reflection of a thought that never really existed.
What are you referring to?
Well, in the brain, like so you might come up with a memory that at age 15, at age 17 you went to India or whatever happened. And the memory, there's no picture with the memory, there's no real, all the elements that would call that a memory aren't there anymore. It's just a verbal memory almost.
Are you speaking of the sage?
Well, yeah, after that occurs where the brain, you said the brain function deadens or whatever.
The brain no longer functions.
Okay.
But then, as you say, there is something there that remembers certain things spontaneously.
Right. But it's totally hollow. There's no picture of the memory, no reality to the memory.
This is true, yes. You do not remember like ordinary people. There is something there, certain things you can remember, but there's no difference between those things in the present or the past or the future.
Because it's, they're all hollow.
It's all one.
It's all nothing. There's no substantialness to it.
Yes. It has no substance.
And that would be transmutation, correct?
That's transmutation. There are many times when I remember something, yet I don't know if it happened yesterday or if it happened 20 years ago or if it happened many lifetimes ago. But sometimes certain things come to me and I wonder where they came from. Everything becomes combines and becomes one.
Do you just ignore them when they arrive, when they appear?
I just watch them.
Watching them pass.
Yes.
I have something I'd like to check out. One of the Beatitudes says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And I'm wondering if the heart is the center of the being, and if it's pure, there are no contaminants in it. And the contaminants in the heart would be any thought. And if there's no thought, at that point, God can be seen, and then we have to go into what that phrase means, which would mean the pure consciousness of Atman or Brahman or whatever other word might be put to the ultimate reality.
Actually, what it means, when you are pure in heart, you become God.
That would, yeah.
You become the absolute reality.
Yeah. Be nice. But I accept it's already so. Is that not real?
So why don't you believe it?
You want to try.
How do we get from intellectual understanding, like he's saying, where we understand it and yet we understand it with the mind, and the mind is what we're trying to get rid of?
By looking at the words that are spoken with deep intelligence, effortlessly.
And witnessing, is that what you mean?
Observing, looking, watching. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, inquiring, to whom does this come? Whatever method suits you. But many beings have awakened simply by looking at the situation, observing it, intelligently focusing on it, and awakening can occur.
Mm-hmm. What does the word intelligently focusing on it mean? What does it mean?
It means when you see that alone, when you look at the words or the phraseology or the situation, the reality, and you're able to see it with wisdom, when you see the total picture as something real, something of substance, you are intelligently looking at the situation and feeling the reality of it, and that causes an awakening to you. That's when you look at a situation. Say you look at Dana and you really see her. You see through the Maya. You do not see the outer layer, but you look through everything and you see how she really is. That's looking at Dana intelligently, effortlessly. You're looking at the spiritual Dana. And that causes you to awaken.
Would the I have a hard time relating to this, but would this, the real Dana be the self?
The real Dana is the self.
So that's what he would look at?
He sees you as energy.
As energy, yeah. And as part of the
spirit,
oneness of all things?
As reality.
So he would see me as himself.
Something in him has grasped you as a real person, the real you. which is himself. That's why he awakens, because he becomes what he saw.
Could I read something from someone wrote me something that explains this also somewhat succinctly?
Someone wrote you a letter?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to read a little bit of the long version. It's very short anyway, but the past, present, and future are projected from the stateless state, the transcendental fourth state, for you. You witness these states as on the cinema screen, which is not affected by the states. Find out the substratum, I guess this is the most important part right here, find out the substratum of these states. Who am I? Who experiences these states? Find out from the thought I, find out from where the thought I arises from. Keep quiet, don't move your mind, make no effort. Just in this no second, make a leap.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you.
This seems the most correct is just to get to that point, and whether you make a leap or not, whatever that really means, you know, is just to get to that point of total stillness, effortless, and then dive into it, whatever it all is. And that's the direct way.
Yes. That's good.
And at that point, the seeing is the being.
The seeing becomes the being.
Becomes the being.
Yes.
You see Dana as she truly is.
And then you become that.
Yeah. And that's what you are.
Yes.
Nothing conceivable to the mind whatsoever. So it's like no use even talking too much about it, just doing that.
The mind has absolutely the mind has absolutely nothing to do with it.
So the word seeing is really being used as the same way you would use the word perceiving.
Yes.
Not seeing.
Not with your eyes. Perceiving your reality. It's not as difficult as it sounds.
If one does it, right?
No, actually all those things that we're talking about happens instantaneously. It all happens in a second. I'm speaking of the entire experience of enlightenment. The experience that you never come back from.
Transmutation.
The whole thing happens in an instant.
In other words, one minute we're asleep and the next we're
no way, just like you are
there. That's it.
Right.
Like gunpowder.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was it? What did you say? It
comes like gunpowder. That's similar to dry bottom on you.
Won't work with wet gunpowder.
But don't be fooled. I mean, that's how it came to him. You know, if it doesn't come like gunpowder, then don't be confused about that.
He said also there's dry wood and damp wood. is apparently one truth that we can learn from psychedelic drugs, and that is that there are states of consciousness other than the one that we ordinarily live in day to day.
Yes.
That's the one thing we can learn.
Mm-hmm.
The other stuff is no more or less important than our daily experiences in this state of consciousness.
Are you still taking LSD?
Sir?
Are you still taking LSD?
No, that's 25 years ago.
Huh?
No, I got the idea. I wasn't supposed to do that.
20.
But you remember, you retain that knowledge.
Of course, it's just in the mind. Better there than not, I suppose. What is it? They come up here with these intellectual concepts. I realize they're of limited value, but to have you corroborate my understanding, makes me feel good. Okay?
Everything you say, friend, is appreciated.
Thank you, sir.
We wouldn't know what to do without you.
I don't know how to say that.
Say it in a good way.
Yeah, took it in a good way.
Thank you.
I've got to use it to tape somehow.
Hey, maybe we should just go to 45 minutes. So.
I think the value that I get from what you say, Fred, is that you've studied so much, and what you do is corroborate that all the masters are saying the same thing. Because you bring up different masters and their teaching, which you corroborate with Robert, and that to me was the most thrilling moment in my life, was when I realized they're all saying the same thing. So that's the value I get from what you're talking
about. That was what awakened an interest in the Eastern philosophy. Did you know a guy named, an Australian, who wrote some stuff under the name of Mooney Sadhu?
What's that?
He wrote under the pen name of Mooney Sadhu. But he wrote that...
Oh, he was a disciple of Ramana?
Yeah, he was a devotee.
I think I know him.
He was an Australian. I don't know his real name, but... He wrote that in the East there's a tradition that all masters are one. They never contradict one another. And I didn't understand it like I do now, but it was enough to awaken an interest, and that was part of my karma.
True. Real sages never contradict each other. It is the disciples who cause the problems.
They argue. I'm right and you're wrong. And all that stuff.
My master's better than your master. My master's better than your master.
Sai Baba is different from all robbers.
I hope. But not too different than Jerry Falwell.
Or Jimmy Swagger.
No, I think there's a difference there.
Yeah. Well, Pee Wee Herman. Would you like to read the anime?
Oh, yes. Realized the identity of his inner being with the infinite Brahman. There is no rebirth, no migration, not even liberation, for he is already liberated. He has firmly established in an experience of the absolute existence, knowledge, bliss, the Satchitananda Atman. The continued existence of the world and of his own body appears to the Jnani only as an illusion, the appearance of which he cannot remove, but which cannot further deceive him till the time when, after the decease of the body, he wanders not forth, but remains where he is and what he is, and eternally was, the first principle of all beings and things. The original, eternal, pure, free Brahman. While living, and even when the body falls dead, the Jnani rests in his own essential nature, his own svarupa, that is, all full, all pure, timeless consciousness and bliss. The following assertions made by a Jnani constitute his own deepest convictions and experience. I am infinite, imperishable, self-luminous, self-existent. I am beginningless, endless, decayless, birthless, deathless. Never was I born. I am ever free, perfect, independent. I alone am. I pervade the entire universe. I am all-permeating and interpenetrating. I am supreme peace and freedom absolute. A Jnani lives forever.
he has attained life everlasting. Cravings torture him not. Sins stain him not. Birth and death touch him not. He is free from all cravings and longings. He ever rests in his own Satchitananda Svarupa. He sees the one infinite self in all, and all in the infinite self, which is his being. He remains forever as the infinite self of consciousness and delight.
Thank you. Do we have any announcements?
I'd just like to say, for the people who have taken some of the transcriptions, I hope you bring them in. And, more?
I think more.
I keep working on them. Okay. Oh, these are some that had to be put out in the paper, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, good, good. Okay. All right, so we do have some to put on the table. Thank you, Fred.
Some of you, if you can,
get
when you take a lesson, make 10 copies and bring them back.
Yeah, it's a good idea, because they go so fast. And then I do mail them out to people, too, so...
Yes, you were so good to mail them to me when I was sick for so long.
Yeah. I knew they did you a lot of good.
Oh,
look,
did.
Here you are.
Okay.
It tells you something.
Get me going.
Next week, Henry will give us all footstools.
Yeah. I'm really happy.
I'll be glad to hand them out if you bring them.
Okay. I've been carrying
them. Well, the three microphones are in the hospital.
We're going to have a Thanksgiving dinner on Sunday after Thanksgiving. Starting at 1:30, we'll have music, festivities. Henry will do a soft shoe routine.
And we all bring a main dish, right? A vegetarian main dish?
Yes.
I'd like
to see you do it, Henry.
No,
he's just an old joker.
And those
nice
soft slippers that you wear.
He doesn't know that I want to tap dance. I don't know that
soft
shoe stuff.
Tap is fun.
We have some prasad.
Thank you, Jay.
Yeah, that's very sweet.